You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
My wife and I do these together because she was an intricate part of the caring for my parents. As she would tell you, if she were here in her own comical way, she became a geriatric nurse overnight with no training and did a wonderful job in doing so. Okay. So I'm giving you a handout. The handout, don't try to follow it, has nothing to do with what's up here. The handout are some critical slides I'm just skipping. Okay. I just don't have time for you to go over them all, but I want you to have the pieces. When you get the, if you download these and get the slides, then you'll get them all. Okay, is that fair enough? Good. Herschel McGriff, anybody know who he is? No NASCAR fans in here? Herschel McGriff is 90 years old, been running NASCAR most of his adult life. And he came in 18th last spring at the Western Regional in Tucson at 90. Okay? He said his mental condition, he stays engaged. He says his physical condition, he goes to the gym daily. Now, nobody wants to have to care for their parents. I don't know anybody that wants to do that in the sense that the necessity drives it. No. We may want to in the sense that if my parent gets there, I want to, but we don't want to. We do it because it's a necessity. In the past years, there were many multi-generational families as a result of economic necessity. Today, there are becoming intergenerational families for necessity, but usually it's precipitated by illness, dementia, Alzheimer's, and sometimes economics. So let me share my story and my wife's story very quickly. I'd love to tell you the whole story, but I can't do that. My mother and dad came to live with us. 5 years later, my mother died of a stroke. And within 3 weeks, I realized my father was a lot worse off than I thought he was. She had been covering for him very well. And so within 3 months, I had to say, Dad, I think you're going to have to give up your driver's license. Because he couldn't drive out of co-pilot. He could drive, but he didn't know where he was going. And he didn't know how to get home when he got there. So we had to he voluntarily gave him up when I asked for him. I have to pat him on the back for that. A lot won't do that. He did. And from that point on, we realized that Dad was going into dementia, but it really turned out to be Alzheimer's, and it got pretty sticky. The last 4 years of his life, he was incontinent. That means I bathed him every day. And one of my most memorable occasions when he hardly knew anything anymore was I got him out of the shower after he'd been terribly messy, and I was down on my knees beside him. My dad was only 5'3". I'm down on my knees beside him, drying him off. He puts his hand on my shoulder, and I won't quote his words. I'll just quote the idea. But he looked at me, and he said, son, I'd be in bad shape. It wouldn't be for you, wouldn't I? He would have what I would call moments of lucidity. Then boom, they were gone. Because I looked at him and I said, well, Dad, that's what family's all about. And he was just staring at me. He came and he went just that quickly. Okay. Some years later, my father-in-law developed Parkinson. That developed into becoming basically immobile. And for 6 months, my wife left after church on Sunday and drove 3 hours to her mother and dad's in the south side of Atlanta. And she helped her mother care for her father until Thursday at noon. Thursday at noon, her brother, who was a on-the-road salesman, came off the road. And he lived next door. So he took over, and my wife came home. And we had Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday together, Sunday morning to church, and then she left me, and we did that for 6 months. And finally, I had to sit down with the care unit at that nursing home, And they wanted to send him home. We had him in a nursing home at that point. They wanted to send him home. And I looked at the director and said, listen, I'm going to talk now, not as a family member. I'm going to talk as a gerontologist. And I pulled out my credentials. I needed them at that point. And I said, you're not sending this man home. Because if you send this man home, you're going to kill that lady. That was my mother-in-law, who happened to be one of my very best friends. And if you don't kill her, you're going to kill her. And I pointed to my wife. You're not sending that man home. He's staying. At that point, they backed off, and Daddy stayed. And within 3 weeks, he was dead. If they'd have sent him home, he would have been 240 pounds of dead weight with two women trying to handle him. You can't do that. Okay? So we've lived it. We've experienced it. We've seen it firsthand. And I've been counseling and helping people see it since then. If you read literature on this whole issue, secular literature, you need to realize that secular literature does not take God into consideration when they're talking about these things. There's some good literature out there, good secular literature. I learned some good things going through that program in Georgia. But you have to filter it through your theological framework in order to understand how do I make application of it. Okay? There are legalities that facilitate relationships. Folks, we are privileged to live in a land still, I don't know how much longer, but we're privileged to live in a land still where we can have some reasonable control over the events in our lives. But you have to take responsibility to take the initiative in order to do that. And some of these legal documents are necessary to facilitate that. And they facilitate relationships if you get them done when everybody can sit and talk about them and be reasonable with each other. But once somebody's mind starts going, it gets very difficult. Okay? Now, my next birthday, I'm going to be 80. My wife and I have everything laid out. All our funeral plans, all these legal documents, everything is in place. We've sat down and talked with our kids. It's all set up. That doesn't mean something can't go wrong. Believe me. But at least we've done due diligence to get the pathway created. And I would encourage you, if you're helping people, one of the first things you want to do is help them, to give them hope, is say, listen, God's blessed you to live in a place where you can set up the sequence for this. Get this legal stuff done. Get it done early on. Fortunately, my father, after those 3 weeks, I sat down and I said, Dad, Mom's covered for you very well. I think we need to go to the lawyers and have power of attorney drawn up. And I explained to him why. And again, much to my surprise, because my dad and I didn't have the best relationship when I was a kid, he looked at me and said, well, kid, if you think that's what we need to do, let's go do it. And so 3 weeks into it, I was able to get that legal document set up, which I quickly realized I really needed because he didn't know how to write a check. He didn't know how to access the Social Security money he received. So I needed that. I needed it early on. Okay? So there's power of attorney. There's end-of-life documents. There are financial considerations. If there are estates involved, then there's another level of legality to be involved with and get the proper attorneys and financial advisors involved, so everything is done. And we just saw Aretha Franklin die. A woman died with an $80 million estate and no will. So just because your parent or the counselee's parent has money doesn't mean they've been smart. Okay? Don't take it for granted. That's part of our job as counselors. Don't take these things for granted. Ask the appropriate questions. Okay? And then there are end-of-life arrangements. I had some insurance policies that I had taken out years ago that had set aside just for burial. That's what they were for. I sat down with a fellow in my Sunday school class who sells pre-arrangements, and I said, okay, Bill, come to the house. Let's get this done. I'm going to cash these policies and get it done. It could cost me a little taxes this way, but I'm going to get it done. So I cashed in those policies. I spent the money, that they were designated for, and we got all the funeral arrangements set up and done. By the way, I saved $5,000 on funeral arrangements by being buried above ground instead of below ground. Because you don't have to have a vault in Alabama if you're above ground. So it saved me $5,000. So just some little things to think about. Okay? Are any of you familiar with what is called a gerontological lawyer? Okay. There are lawyers who specialize in law regarding aging. Okay? They're very helpful folks. We for a number of years now, we've done a seminar at Briarwood. Our church is 4,200 people, good spread of upper middle class people. And so about every other year, we do a seminar in which we offer this training to our people at large, and we have a gerontological lawyer come in. We have a gerontologist come in. On one occasion, I actually had a gerontological psychiatrist come in, and I'll put an explanation on that a little bit later. Okay. I'll do it here. I've got him here. I'll list it here. This particular piece has to do with chemistry and brain function. These gerontological psychiatrist has some special training in evaluating where the person is in terms of dementia, Alzheimer's, or whatever it may be. They're good at it. That's what their job is. They know how to do it, and they can make those evaluations. The general GP probably can give you a ballpark, but he's not going to give you a good call necessarily. Abuse takes place within relationships. And our conference here has been about this arena. And believe me, when it comes to elder abuse, you have to be watching for it. Elder abuse and neglect is a single or repeated act or a lack of appropriate action occurring within any relationship where there is an expectation of trust which causes harm or distress to an elderly person. Four likely categories of abuse are commonly noted. Again, the psychological is the term that's used in the field to pull these things together. It means verbal manipulation, hitting, punishing, over-medication, inappropriate restraints, or confinement. My father began to hallucinate about 4 years before he died. He started hallucinating. And the GP that we were involved with, a good friend of mine, in fact, he had gone through counselor training with me. And I went to see him. I said, what can I do to kind of just do some medicate just to take the edge off of this? And so he gave me a prescription. He said, no, look, he said, you take this, and you give him this much. He said, and use that as an upper or a downer. Do you go down, or do you go up? He said, if he sleeps too much, you come down. And if you come down and he hallucinates too much, you go up a little bit. You just adjust the dosage accordingly. Now, not all docs will do that, but this guy knew me well, and I knew him well, and so he gave me that freedom to do that. And it took the edge off of the hallucinations. That's not a sinful situation. It's a biological situation. And all you're doing is trying to manage the ultimate results of sin in that person's life. Not their sin, the sin of Adam. Okay? And then there's financial misappropriation of funds. I did not do this in my case because at that point in time I didn't know enough to do it. But if I had to do it over again, I would handle all my dad's finances through a third party. So there's no question about what you do with it. Okay. Not necessary. In my mind, that's a voluntary thing you do. If you don't do that, I have a friend that's doing it right now. His sister and he, once a month, sit down. They go. He does it, but his sister, he could sit down, and they go through it. So there's good accountability there. Okay. Physical, inadequate food, clothing, social contact, health needs. I don't have to illustrate those. They're kind of obvious if you think about it. I have not found in my practice over the years, I have not found that sexual abuse within the family with an older person, I don't think I've ever seen a case of it in my own personal practice. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I think this is something that happens very seldom in within the family, okay? But it doesn't mean you shouldn't be alert for that possibility. Critical relationship to consider when approaching parenting parents. What I'm going to walk through here are some things that can easily crop up. Critical relationships. One, with the parent. What kind of relationship do you have with a parent? Or what kind of relationship does your counselee have with that parent? What's the history? How well do they communicate or how well do they not communicate? Okay. Is there mutual respect? I just had somebody walk up to me here and they were telling me about a situation and said, the parent doesn't respect the son, and the son doesn't respect the parent. What do I do now? And that's where the church, as he was saying in that last session, that's where the church needs to come into place and assist those people with that juncture in their lives. How about the siblings? I had another person talk to me here about a situation because the one sibling lives in town and two live out of town. One of the ones that live out of town is adopted. Now you can just begin to see the lay of the land, okay? Who do you think gets all the weight for the care? The one in town, okay? Who do you think has the biggest mouth about the whole thing? Yeah. It just is what it is, folks. And part of the role we get as a biblical counselor, as a pastor, as a friend sometimes, is just helping people think through how do I biblically mitigate the damage and how do I biblically transform this situation if possible. And then the same thing goes with extended family. Resolving unfinished business makes parenting parents a better experience. I'm going to walk you through what I consider and have observed over the years, the six most critical problems that people bring with them to the end of life. Okay? And you say, what in the world does that have to do with it? Well, that's my train room when it was under construction. It was unfinished. It was useless for anybody at that point in time. Now, it's got a nice layout of model trains, all working and blowing their horns and going on the track. But when it was this way, it was useless. It was unfinished. Okay. Six critical issues. Personal failures. People come to the end of life and they're mourning personal failures. If they're not mourning them, they're angry about them. If they're not angry about them, they're wishing there was a way to fix it. One of them is parenting the prodigal child. I have one of those right now. Somebody just came to me recently and said, you know, I'm at the end of my life and my son hasn't come back. What do I do? What can I do? That prodigal child. So you're not only dealing with trying to answer his question, is there something you can do about the prodigal child? But on the other side of the coin, how does he do his side of unfixing, if I can put it that way, the unfinished business? And then you have the people that regret the fact that they have the inability to provide for their own self-care. I was an only child, and my parents were in their 40s when I was born, and my dad was a pipe fitter, and back in when he was a pipe fitter, he made good money. The problem is half the year he was on strike or weather didn't let him work. So even though he made a good salary when he worked, he he didn't make much of a good salary if you looked at a whole year at a time. So he got to the end of life. You know what he had? A meager Social Security check. That was it. And then there are those who have regrets over broken families. What do you tell somebody who has regrets over a broken family? How do you help them? Well, each one of these, I'm going to give you one source. Bill Hine's book, Leaving Yesterday Behind. It's similar to the one you're more familiar with, probably put out by Steve Byers a couple years ago. But I like Bill's especially, because he uses a story, tells a story, and out of that story, he shows you the importance of cleaning up bad relationships and how you can do it. I'm not going to try how to do that counseling. I'm just giving you a resource where to go, pointing out the problem and the resource where to go. There isn't time to do the other. Career failures. Career failures. Coming to the end of life, and I did not achieve my goals. That leads to depression. Forced to take early retirement may well lead to depression. Minimal estate to pass on, that leads to depression. Now, all of that depression is a result of inappropriate biblical thinking about life. I understand that. I'm just pointing out these are things that you're going to face. They occur with regularity. People get there with regularity. One of the best books I've ever come upon is to deal with something like this is The God You Can Know by Dan DeHaan. Now, how many of you are familiar with Knowing God by J.I. Packer? Okay? This is, J.I. Packer is this book on steroids. You know, it's for the graduate student. This book is for the high school level person. He deals with the same material, but he uses language and he puts it in a way that the average person can grapple with it pretty quickly. And I the character of God and the way you view the character of God, I think is essential to working your way through your thinking about any one of those three problems. Self-perception. How does a person perceive themselves coming at the end of life? I did a little booklet a couple years ago called Who I Am in Christ. And basically, if you think of the book that came out about 2 years ago on Union with Christ, anybody familiar with that? I can't think of the author's name right now. Really a good work on union with Christ, identity, so forth. The little booklet I did simply helps people work through, fill in the blanks, work through, think about who I am in Christ. Again, essential to dealing with this whole self-perception anomaly that people come to the end of life with. I got a couple of notes in there. I'm going to skip that one right now. Just go to this one. Hit the wrong button. Family Conflicts. The Peacemaker for Family by Ken Sandy is my recommendation here. Conflicts over who will care for the parent. You might think it's great if you have six kids. Yeah, it is great if you have six kids, but it's also a battlefield a lot of times because there's one person in that six who isn't going to like the way everybody else wants to do it. I almost guarantee you. Then there's conversations that allow the family to plan for and care for the distribution of the estate. How do you do that? Open discussion and honest discussion. Ken Sandy's book helps you with some basic biblical framework principles to carry that out. Living arrangements. Pardon me for being self-promoting. I don't mean it that way, but I'm just very familiar with what I've done. But that book I was mentioning earlier before all of you get in here, The Art of Aging, which is again going to be available in about a month on Kindle. You can get it there. In that book, I deal with how do you think through, what are the options for living arrangements for aging parents, and how do you go about setting it up? My dad's question, and there toward the end of his life, another one was, he looked at me one day, he said, "Kid," he always called me kid, I don't know why, he always called me kid. He said, "Kid, don't put me in a nursing home." And I said, "Pop, you don't go to a nursing home unless that becomes an absolute necessity. Don't ever say to them, we'll never do that. Don't ever do that. Because then if an absolute necessity comes, you betrayed them." It's like, hey, it's like confidentiality. Never give people absolute confidentiality in counseling. You back yourself into a corner. I give you a list of some biblical principles there that I think apply. In the book, there's a whole lot more discussion on the basis of biblical framework. Here's the question too. Am I ready to die? Am I ready to die? I have a friend in my Sunday school class. His name is John. His father was about 92 or 93. Up until about a year before he died, he was as spry as I am now, maybe more so. And then all of a sudden, he did what in gerontology we call the terminal fall, and he just started going down. John's daddy came to Christ 2 days before he died. Who will do the evangelism? Well, will you evangelize your parent? Will your counselee evangelize the parent? And some of the answer to that depends. If they've had a history of a life of conflict between them, probably not. But they need to see that somebody has that last opportunity. I have another guy in my Sunday school class just last weekend flew to Wisconsin. Early morning on Saturday, flew back Saturday night. He only went for one reason. One more time to share the gospel with his daddy. I got a text Sunday morning, 4:10, his daddy died. You might ask, how do you do it? I love the EE questions. If you're not familiar with them, look them up. The whole context. This is just the simple statement of them. Have you come to the place in your spiritual life where you know for certain that if you were to die today, you would go to heaven? Or is that something you would say you're still working on? John 5:13, these things have I written so that you might know. Second question is, have you come to the place in your spiritual life where you know for certain? I hit the wrong button again. Suppose you were to die today and stand before God, and he were say to you, "Why should I let you into my heaven?" What would you say? Folks, you can be direct, but you have to be gentle. And I'm going to take a moment to tell you, older people are vulnerable to evangelism. When I first moved to Alabama 24 years ago, I went to pastor church. When I came to the church, the first thing the senior elder told me is, "I've got an assignment for you." That's always kind of rattles your cage. And I looked at him, I said, "Okay, Milton, what is it?" He said, "You need to get my mother-in-law saved. She was 91 years old. Bright and sharp as anybody 25 is. Her body wasn't, but her brain was. They would bring her to church every Sunday. She came from a hard-nosed Church of Christ background, works, 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 works. I visited her every Monday. I spent about 10 minutes listening to her tell me about her life, ask her a couple questions about her life, and I'd ask her, take about 10 minutes and say, "Tell me what you got out of the sermon yesterday." And I'd pray and I'd leave. A little bit of gospel here, a little bit of gospel there, a little bit of gospel here, a little bit of gospel there. About a year into it, he showed up at church on Sunday morning early to meet with me. He just gave me a big bear hug. He said, Mama came to my wife yesterday and said, I'm ready to trust Jesus. I got to baptize her at 93 and bring her into the church. Had another family in that church where the wife came. The husband I saw once in 3 months. And then his 35-year-old daughter died suddenly of an aneurysm. And I was asked if I'd go to the funeral. I thought, I intend to, but it was in another city 60 miles away. So I told my wife, I said, we'll go to the funeral, we'll go to the memorial service, but we won't go to the gravesite. I didn't even know the guy. I mean, I had met him once. Went to the funeral, came out from the funeral, and two of the teenagers came to me and said, Tiny would like you to go to the funeral, the grave site with him. So I handed my wife the keys. I said, follow us, babe. I'm going to go. I got in a hearse with him. Folks, I've never heard anybody scream like that man. Honestly, never heard anybody scream like that man screamed. It was like he reached down to his toes and pulled the scream all the way up from the bottom. His wife was embarrassed. I just reached over and I squeezed his leg and I said, it's okay. He's just letting out his grief. Went with him, and then for the next 3, 4, 5 months, I forget exactly the time anymore, I went to visit him every week. For the first 6 weeks or so, never said a word. I'd walk in the door, I'd sit down with him at the table, he'd never say a word. I'd sit there for 10 minutes or so, I'd reach over and hold his hand, say, can I pray for you, Tiny? And he'd shake his head, yes, and I'd pray for him, I'd leave. But a year later, by God's grace, I baptized Tiny, and he came into the church. He became one of the best workers I ever had. He was 70 years old. Delightful guy. I went back to the session wasn't real sure we should take him in. They weren't real sure of his profession of faith. I said, men, trust me on this one. I went back some years later to that town to visit, and I stopped by to see him, and Tiny said this to me. He said, thank you. My nickname's Arky. He said, Arky, thank you for coming to Silicaca. If you hadn't come, I wouldn't know Jesus. I think that's a pretty good testimony. Okay. Older people can be led to Christ, but you have to build a relationship with them. And I just covered all that, so let me go to preparing to care. Preparing you and your parent or your counselee and the parent. The influence upon our lives determines our heart attitudes, and our heart attitudes and mindset determine the way we think and choose expectations, view the inevitables that come into our life, and process our spiritual life. Therefore, saturate your mind with the Word of God. Philippians 4:8 and Philippians 5:8. I think it's 5:8 and 9. Instead of just 5, I think it's 5:8 and 9. Are critical at this point. There's always the selfish influence of taking care of self, looking after self, that can impact the way we look at this whole thing. This is one of those places you have to choose to put self aside and your own welfare aside and put somebody else's in place of it. Preparing yourself. Expectations. What is your mental picture? Financial. Who pays for what and who manages the money? I touched on this earlier, but just a little bit more about it. What are the expectations? Folks, the biggest reason we have problems with expectations, and I'm going to take a moment to illustrate. Yesterday, my wife and I got a little crosswise. And the reason we did is I was expecting her to do X, Y, Z because I thought I knew her well enough that when I said this, she would do that. Now, you think after 56 years and being in this business for about 45 years, I wouldn't do that. But it happens. It's real. We're people. Okay? So The best thing you do is get people to talk out their expectations. Sometimes get them talking about it, get them to write them on paper. Get a plan on paper. And involve all the principals, unless they're already gone loony, involve all the principals in the process. Space. If they're coming to live with you, who gets what space, and how do you take? When my parents first moved in with us, I was pastoring a church, planning a church actually at that point in time, and we just built a new house. So my wife had a new house and new in-laws living with her. And my mother did not go to church. She was a believer. My mother did not go to church because her hearing was just gone. And she'd go to church, she couldn't hear anything anyway. So we took the kiddos, and we went off to church, and I preached. We had a good Sunday, and we came home. We walked in the house, and it smelled great. You know why? My mama had been in my wife's new kitchen and made Sunday dinner for everybody. And my wife didn't like that. And I finally just kind of got her son. I said, "Now, Pam, stop and think. You know my mama. My mama is not trying to take over your kitchen. My mama is trying to serve you." And with her, it was like, oh, of course. And that was the end of it. And for the next couple years, we had Sunday dinner on the table when we came home. And everybody was happy camper. Okay? Children. Who disciplines them? And here again, we had an interesting one. My mom loved candy. And she thought everybody ought to have candy. And we used to, "Mom, don't give the kids so much candy." You know? Well, she just started giving it to them and we didn't see it. There are some things you just learn to live with. You know, you accept them. It's accepting one another. You ever heard that term? Ever hear where that come from? Accepting one another. Where's that come from? Romans, yeah. Another one is preferring one another. Where's that one come from? Yeah. Why do you think those things were in the scripture? Because they help us glorify God in the way we relate to one another. I've been threatening for years to write a book on the protocol for communication in marriage and just go through all the one other passages and apply them to marital situations, because that's what they are. They're protocols for good communication with anywhere, but particularly in a marriage. Inclusive. Will these, taking care of these parents, will they live in with the family? Will they have an exclusive in-law suite and just participate by invitation? Or will they be what I call mixclusive? And that's where it usually ends up, mixclusive. There's usually somewhat of a separation and somewhat of an integration. Okay. Conflict resolution. How have you and the parent handled conflict previously? If it was thorny, then discuss with your mate and your parents before you combine households, taking financial responsibility, and with the siblings if rotating care in the parents' home. In other words, I'm just back again to good, clear communication up front. It's just saying it a different way and from coming up from a little bit different position, but it's the same thing. You've got to help people learn how to sit and look each other, respect each other, and talk to each other. I've found over the years in counseling practice that it's best to get mama and daddy and son and daughter-in-law and grandchildren and sisters and brothers. I have on one occasion had about 12 or 14 people in a room at one time facilitating discussion. No, you wait. It's his turn. Okay. No, I said, you wait. It's his turn. You know? And you end up being the, what do you want to call it, the choir director? No, it's the alto's turn, and now it's the bass's turn. But you end up having to be that coach, that ball, that you can go all kinds of metaphors to get it done, but you know what I'm talking about there. Depression will likely be a component of your parents' experience and most likely of the caregiver's experience for lots of different reasons. And one of the reasons is diminished capacity for recognition. My dad knew he was losing it. And sometimes he could talk about it, and sometimes he couldn't talk about it because there were times he didn't realize it, what it was and where he was. But there were other times he did. And over the years, it diminished. He got less and less of his being aware. Okay? And then there's the death expectation. Lots of believers still fear death. Now, depends what your level of maturity is. I don't fear death, I just fear dying. I have a low tolerance for pain, always have had. Fear of self-harm, there's that. This is one of the things, whether you're aware or not, the rate of suicide among the elderly is just going like this. Then there's the loss, the very knowledge of the loss of ability for self-care, the overwhelming anxiety over the ability to do what is necessary. This is more on the caregiver side. You just get overwhelmed with what it takes. You have three kids, a third grader, a sixth grader, and an eighth grader, and two parents you're taking care of, and a husband that works out of town 3 days a week. When we were going through those latter stages, I had a job in a church, but I was also had a position where I was responsible for this organization, and I was traveling out of the country to teach out of the country. And my wife was left with a father-in-law who had to be bathed. Wasn't easy. And then there's a resentment toward the loved one or God. And I would lead you through a bunch of Psalms, but I'm not going to because our two speakers earlier today and yet last night led you through a lot of those Psalms. I just reference you back to them. Preparing your home. If you're going to be a caregiver, you got to prepare the home. You got to think in terms of wheelchairs, walkers. You got to think of people being able to get out of chairs. You ever sat in one of those chairs, you pull the trigger, you popped out? Well, my father-in-law had one. It wasn't, otherwise, my mother-in-law would have been there 2 feet planted and two hands on him and pulling. You know? Scooters, they're pretty popular these days. Okay, bathing. How will you take care? The house we were living in at the time was great. It had a big shower, and you had to step over something about that high to get into it. So literally, I could step in the shower with Dad, and one of these wand kind of things, and bathing. But sometimes it's not like that. Sometimes you live in a house with a shower this big. What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? Okay. Then the question comes, do we remodel? And if the question is, we remodel, then the question is what? Who pays for it? Yeah. But again, as long as the parent is cognizant, involve the parent in the conversation. Okay. Care process. Love. What does love look like? Honor them. Respect their position as parent. That doesn't mean you do what they tell you to do. That's not what it means. It means you treat them with respect. You remember who they are. I can remember more than one occasion honestly being frustrated with my dad. and inside looking at him and saying, Lord, help me remember, that's me one of these days. Forgive them. Release the past. I'm telling you, if your counselee or you coming into this have issues about your parents in the past, you better deal with it. Because if you don't deal with it, it's going to explode. And you're going to be miserable. And you're probably going to be miserable anyway, but if you don't deal with it and you're caring for them, you're going to be miserable for sure. Esteem them publicly and privately. Commend them before others. Express appreciation in daily life. Now, I don't have a lot of good memories of my dad growing up because I could never do anything right. Never. And I'm not exaggerating. But there's two things my dad taught me that I really appreciate. He taught me how to play baseball. I don't like the way he taught me how to play baseball because it was always correct, 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 correct. Or can't you ever get done and get that ball without bouncing it past you? I don't like the way he trained me, but he still taught me. And I became a very good baseball player. And I did because of my dad's training early on. And I understood the game early on because my dad taught me. And I would always tell guys that. That's a great, sweet memory I have of dad. Okay? And I'll tell you another thing I did to honor him. At Christmas time, we lived in Pennsylvania for most of these years. We'd go to a Christmas tree farm to get a Christmas tree. I'd take my kids, I'd get the money it took for the Christmas tree, and four hot chocolates, and I put it in Pop's pocket. And we'd go get the Christmas tree, and Pop and the kids would pick the tree up. I didn't overrule it. Every time I wanted to overrule it, but I didn't overrule it. I took the one they picked. We'd cut it down and drag it back to the Christmas tree place, and while they were wrapping it, Pop would pay for the tree and buy hot chocolate for the four of us. And he'd smile from ear to ear. By the time we got home, he didn't know where we'd been. But in the existential moment, it meant something to him. And it meant something to me, and it meant something to the kids to see it mean something to him. Support them. While there are many similarities, your situation is your situation, and how and when that support, it varies. And I just give you a couple of references there to look at. I don't know what support means in any given situation, but you have to think through what does it mean to be supportive in this situation. Plan for physical care. That includes medicine, bathing, activities, and outings. And I've kind of covered those in what I've been saying earlier in a couple of my illustrations, so I won't linger on them. And then respite care. My friends, if you're caring for your parent or your counselee is caring for their parent, respite care is an essential. It's an essential. And today it's much more available than it was when we went through this back in the late 70s and early 80s. But you need a break. Okay? And honestly, they need a break from you. Robotic caregiving. Artificial intelligence to the rescue. I was with Johnny Erickson at a conference last December. And I was privileged to have dinner with her and her husband. And I was telling her about my book and revising it. And she encouraged me to add a chapter on disabilities and aging. And so I was researching and I did that. And while I was doing it, I came upon this. And honestly, before that, I was ignorant. I'm surprised I had not come upon this. But robotics in assisting with caring for the aging is a huge up-and-coming enterprise. Georgia Tech University has a team of researchers. That's all they do is work on developing robotics for helping with caring with seniors. Japan is way ahead of us in the development of these things. So I included the chapter at the end of the book on robotics and senior care. And I didn't put a lot of detail in it because it's changing so rapidly. I just gave a general discussion of it and then showed you where to go to kind of keep up with the trends and what's happening. But it's very fascinating. This one company has an artificial dog that feels just like a real dog and responds kind of like a real dog, but it's plugged into a monitoring system. So while it gives comfort to the senior, it's a monitoring system so that if something changes in that senior's routine or the way they're doing things, on the other end, the monitors say, wait a minute, something's wrong here. Need to check on this. So it's a two-way kind of arrangement, okay? And that's just one of the ones I came upon in the research. Fascinating kind of stuff. But folks, the bottom line is, and when your sheets I handed out, if you get a sheet, there's some sheets floating around, pick it up because it covers the slides I didn't even give you today. And it gives you a list of scriptures and a theological framework to some extent. But I couldn't go through all those and just give you the practical stuff. And I kind of felt like there's been so much other ahead of me that the theological has been pretty much discussed that I wanted to concentrate more on the practical here. Okay? Now I have about 5 minutes left, so let me just stop and ask anybody has a question. I feel like I've been going like a machine gun. Any questions? Yes.
So my in-laws are in their 80s.
Yes.
And my mother-in-law was diagnosed with Alzheimer's stage 5, or she's at stage 5 now, and he's the primary caregiver. We're the closest to him, about 3 hours away. He does not want to move. He's like in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
But our concern is really for him and trying to care for her. There is some respite help in their home from time to time, but we are talking to them about when's the right time to move her into a permanent facility. And do you have any advice on how to determine that?
Actually, I have a chapter in this book on that.
Great.
Yeah, at the chapter in there on that. But just give you a very quick look at that. One, ask your physician. Okay, ask your physician what's his recommendation. That's one. Two is spend a day there. Not to do much, spend a day to observe and watch her. See just what she can do and what she can't do and what he's having to do for her. Okay? And it may not be you have to move her in just yet, but you may have an organization like Visiting Angels or somebody like that who come and spend a couple of hours in the morning and a couple of hours late evening, get her ready for bed, do those kind of things. So those organizations are very helpful. Yes, you have to pay for it, but it's cheaper than 24/7 in a nursing home. Okay? Visiting Angels. Just look it up on the web. Just put in Google Visiting Angels, and it'll take you right to it. Now you might end up with the first one that comes up might be where they're selling franchise. You don't want that. You want a local franchise that's already in business. And there are other ones. That's just the one that sticks out in my mind. Yes.
My wife and I brought my mom over from England to live with us. She lived with us for about 3 years. And you mentioned about getting a third party involved in finances. My mother, she was in the early stages of dementia that we didn't know. And she started to get really upset that her pension money was coming down. I couldn't get her to understand it was because of the exchange rate.
Yeah.
She knew what her original amount was
right
when she first came over.
Right.
But the exchange rate So my question is, do you recommend the third party be a family member or somebody with legal standing?
I think it depends on the situation. If you and your sibling get along well, then you and your sibling set up where you look at the books together once a month. You may be doing it, but you walk her through it once a month or walk him through it once a month. And if that's not the situation, then in that particular problem there, I would take her, even though she's getting some dementia, I'd take her to the bank with me. I'd have a banker explain it to her. Even though you know it, I'd have the third party give her the explanation. So that, folks, a lot of these things, stop, ask for wisdom, and expect God to give you common sense. Okay?
In light of forgiving them, you say releasing the past, what about when you have parents who continue to be verbally aggressive and abusive, not because of dementia, but because of sin, and where bringing them, say, into your home would cause an so much stress in the relationship, even in the immediate family between a husband and wife and the kids?
And I think in those, you have to prayerfully look at a situation, and if there's another alternative, financially is another alternative, take the other alternative. Honoring them doesn't mean I have to put them in my home. Honoring means I'm going to make sure they have appropriate situation, appropriate care.
How do you minister to, my mom lost my father due to lymphoma. She's fairly young, 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to force, she's originally from Houston, Texas. I now live in San Diego. We bought a condo for her to be in. She's just, everything's different and it's hard for her. And I understand that. I want to give her that. And I want to do that in grace. And I want to understand her. I also have a sister who has special needs, so she's taking care of as well too. And she come from a Methodist background where church is not really fully involved per se. I mean, they do get involved, but as far as biblical teaching and understanding, very watered down.
Right.
And she sees the church that I'm serving at, and she just sees an age.
Sees what?
She just sees age. We're a young church.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're a young church, and she just goes, I cannot, you're just so young, overall, that's what she sees. And we want to serve her. We're trying to serve her. And not that I'm not saying that she cannot go to a different church. She doesn't want to check for
it. Let me make a suggestion to you. Now, instead of you doing all of it, get a couple other couples in your church. Those young couples, get other couple of the couples on your team. Get them to take an interest in her. Sit down. She comes to church, sit down with her and get a conversation going. Spend some time talking with her. Now my wife's 78, but I'm serving a church as an interim right now because they pulled out of a liberal denomination. I'm trying to help them make a transition. There's a 92-year-old Indian woman in that congregation who has no teeth and has a very distinct Indian accent. Now, Indian accent's hard enough to understand, but without teeth. But my wife goes and sits and talks with her every Sunday. And now it's to the place where we come in and she goes. Now, the age differential may not seem that much, but I think the older you get, it gets exaggerated. it's still.
You have people who are also later, about 5 years younger than her.
No, they're good, but she needs some younger people to take an interest in her and cultivate her, in order for her to begin to feel comfortable there. And this is what I call intergenerationalism, and I think the Church of Jesus Christ is desperately in need of intergenerationalism.
So do your resources, or do you have other resources specifically for those caregiving, but somebody with Alzheimer's, when even as a believer, at the end of life, because of where they are,
Oh, yeah.
Violent, sexual, and how caregivers can
You know, you're not going to, you're going to be surprised at the reference I'm going to give you. But I would actually engage with the local Alzheimer's Association. And the reason I say that is those folks, they deal with that particular issue with great regularity, and they're very much about helping caregivers with those particular issues. I think you probably know the theological, okay? It's the practical side of it. And I think you could pick some practical things up with them. You have to evaluate what they tell you theologically, biblically, but I think they have some, they've done a lot of work in that arena, and I think you get some help there. Pardon me? Alzheimer's Association. Yeah. Yes. And I don't have time to dig into it. I'll simply say, I would look that up. I'd Google that and read it, because it has some different nuances on it, depending what you're looking at. Yes. Yeah. But look it up and read about it. There's a lot of information out there you can get quickly, but there's some nuances to it. I'd have to really sit and kind of walk through your situation to make it. Yeah. 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 It is. One more, and I gotta go.
I was just gonna say, I've used The Art of Aging, and I've used Not Forgotten by Mask, which is a wonderful resource.
Yeah.
For what she was just asking right. About. The Art of Aging has helped me. I've got two elderly parents, and I live in a retirement area.
Yeah.
I
was gonna read a letter enough time. I got a letter from a 24-year-old student who read my book, and I asked him if I could have a copy of it and use it to promote people reading it, not to sell books, but to get people, younger people, introduced in reading and thinking about it. He said, reading that book has changed my whole perspective on life. Yeah. Yeah. That one and my Art of Aging, the two of those together. Yeah. Thank you, folks. Appreciate it.